Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Wayne and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you to our first three speakers. You might have noticed I've broken the bell, so the bell's not working. But it gives me great pleasure to introduce our final speaker, Scott L.
Thank you, Wayne. My name is Scott Lee. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Scott. And,
very, very pleased to be here. Thank you. And thank you to the previous speakers. The pressure's off of me. The message has already been carried. And what a wonderful thing it is to participate in this kind of meeting. I'm a member of the backroom group in Nashville, Tennessee, in the colonies. And I just report that things are good in the colonies. I thought I'd let you guys know that. And I like to open anything I'm involved with a quotation from Lois Wilson, who was asked one time what she did in the moment of silence before the Serenity Prayer, which is how we open the meetings here. And she said, I invite God to the meeting. I'm going to ask you to do that. I'm going to take a moment and ask everyone here if you would literally invite God to this meeting. If you don't have a God, let me recommend you borrow mine. I recommend him very highly. Been keeping me sober for a pretty good bit over 35 years, which is a long time for a guy that only agreed to 28 days. So you can address him as the God of Scott's limited understanding if you don't have one. And we'll just see what happens. Let's take a few moments and acknowledge the presence of deity. Amen. Thank you. It just feels good when I do that. And the meetings got better everywhere when I started doing that. So I wanted to share that with you. I used to be bad to drink. You know, quitting drinking is probably the easiest thing in the world. I've done it over 2,000 times. But not starting again was a little bit difficult. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But I was out with the boys and they walked into a bar and I walked into the bar and they ordered a beer and I ordered a beer too. I was 18 years old. I ordered the same brand of beer that they order. I can do what you do so fast. It looks like we did it at the same time. We start drinking this beer. I don't like the beer. I don't like the taste of the beer. I don't like the way the foam feels going down my throat. It makes me feel full. I don't like that either, but I'm doing what they're doing. And I'm hyper-vigilant. I'm watching them very closely. And I'm drinking my beer at the same pace they are. And as we approach the bottom of the first beer, I'm thinking, let's get out of here. And they order another beer. And everyone listening to me knows what I did. I ordered another beer. And by the time I got to the bottom of the second one, I got the magic that all alcoholics understand. And I just got taller, smarter, better looking. I could talk to the girls. Fantastic dancer. Expert on many subjects. Wow, this is the magic juice. I've been looking for this all my life. Didn't know what it was, but I knew I'd been looking for it. And I would have paid a high price, and I did, for any one of those. And I got them all for the price of two beers. And I haven't even gotten to the biggest one. The biggest one, for the first time in my life, something deep in my soul went, and it was just okay to be Scott. Never had been. I don't know how it happened. By the time I was 6 or 8 years old, I was to realize what was going to be the greatest truth in my life for the next 30 years. It wasn't a truth, but it was to me. And that's that I'm not good enough. I'm one of the defective ones. There are things wrong with me that can't be fixed or even worked on. And I became an actor as a small boy. And my act is I'm going to pretend to be the guy that I think you want me to be. And you, as whoever's in front of me right this second, I'm a different guy to everybody. At the end of my drinking, I got one customer who's a very religious guy. He knows a very religious Scott. I got another customer that's a Friday night party kind of guy. He knows a Friday night party kind of Scott. I got the boys in the pool room where I buy my dope and drink my beer. They know that Scott. I got neighbors, business partners, family members. Everyone knows a different Scott. And the greatest fear in my life is that people from different parts of my life be at the same place at the same time. How am I going to act? Because I'm acting all the time, trying to hold up the right mask. That's it. If I'm awake, I'm somewhere between yellow and red alert, trying to hold up the right mask to keep you from seeing the real me. Because if you can see me like I see me, you'll feel about me like I feel about me, and I think I'm trash. And clearly, a bunch of together people like you would not have a defective model like me around if you knew. And so my great mission in life is to literally keep you from finding out who I am. And it takes a tremendous amount of energy to do that. I don't know how much longer I could have done it. I think alcohol kept me alive until I could get to you. And I chased it hard. I zipped through a four-year college and 5 years in two summer schools. I joined the United States Air Force. They were taking everybody in the mid-60s. And I went to Air Force pilot training. And in the second 6 months of that training, we flew the T-38, which you're all familiar with. I'm assuming you saw the movie Top Gun. Everybody over here did. And Tom Cruise thought it was a MiG. And I happened to just gotten a model, but that's this airplane. And I had the privilege of flying this. I flew 100 missions in this thing. It's a high-performance airplane. Let me tell you what that means. That means afterburners faster than the speed of sound. I've been through the Mach 12 or 15 or 20 times. I don't know. And you would take the runway in this airplane. You lock the canopy. You lock the brakes. You run the throttles up to military power. It's everything short of afterburner. You release the brakes and roll a couple hundred yards and light the burners. A mile later at 155 knots, which is about 170 miles an hour, you make a very slight backward pressure on the stick, very slight, and the nose wheel comes off. At about 170, she flies off. You raise the flaps at 1,000 feet. I'm sorry, you raise the gear. At 1,000 feet, I raise the flaps and begin to apply forward pressure on the stick, very gently, holding it level. And I stay level at 1,000 feet till I get to 600 knots, and then I pull up. And I level at 40,000 feet, 3.5 minutes after brake release. This airplane has a roll rate of 720 degrees a second. That's twice every second. And we did that. A loop is a 300, let me see if I can get with the model. A loop is a 360 degree turn through the vertical plane, pulling positive G's. It's like that. And this airplane, we enter the loop at 10,000 feet at 500 knots, pull up at 5 G's. And you're pulling 1 G right now. It's the force of gravity. At one G, a 200-pound man weighs 200 pounds. At 5 G's, a 200-pound man weighs 1,000 pounds. That's exactly what that means. Everything on you weighs times five. That includes your upper eyelids, by the way. All right, 10,000 feet, 500 knots, 5 G's. We're wings level inverted at 20,000 feet. It takes 2 miles vertically to pull her over on her back, and we lose 10,000 feet down the backside. Total elapsed time, 25 seconds, a little less than 25 seconds. And I tell you all that for two reasons. The first one, of course, is to impress you. I would assume you are. I was impressed. We got to get one of those. And the second one is to help you see my alcoholism and maybe yours. We finished about 5:30 in the afternoon, and I'm going to tell you about a particular night. Now, I used to go out to get drunk a lot. That's my mission tonight. I'm going out to get drunk tonight. And if you're not going out to get drunk, I don't want you along. You're going to be a problem later. You've probably been out with people like that. They should do something else. But did you ever get drunk by accident? Ever accidentally drunk on a night when you were sure you weren't gonna, because whatever? Well, this particular night, I don't plan to get drunk, because tomorrow morning, there's going to be two of us. And as the wheels are coming up, I'm going to pull up under his tail. And if I could stand up in my cockpit, I can almost touch his afterburner. We're going to be going as fast as 700 miles an hour, going over the top, pulling as many as 7.5 G's. Try to imagine you've just been notified that tomorrow morning you're going to be put into the world's largest roller coaster. It's going to run for 1.5 hours, and all you can do is ride. You would not plan to take a hangover on that ride. Does that make sense? I hope it makes sense to you. And guys like me can sleep on roller coasters. That is nothing compared to what I'm fixing to do. So I'm clearly not going to get drunk tonight, but I do want to socialize with the other pilots of my squadron. I think I'll drop by the club and have one, no more than two. Should be home by 6:30, no later than 7. You probably recognize that from what you told somebody on the phone. And but what happens is, by the time I get to the bottom of the second one, I think I changed my mind. It's not what happened. What happened was I got this craving Silkworth talks about. But I come up with a reason. Oh, okay, a bartender, yeah, I'm going to watch one more quarter of the ball game. Set him up again. I tell you what, Patrick, rack him up again. We'll shoot a couple of more games of pool. Two more over here, bartender. I think I changed my mind. And I don't get home by 6:30 or 7 with one or two in me. I leave the club at exactly 1 o'clock in the morning because they close. Is there another reason to leave? I'm not aware of one. I drive home drunk with a hand over one eye. I walk in, my first wife rips into me. There's a lot of information in that sentence. And I go into the bathroom for my after drinking chores. I'm a puker, and I'm a nose puker. I don't know if you've ever puked out your nose. If you haven't, I would like for you to know, just in case, that if you puke out your nose tomorrow, your sinuses and nose will sting with every breath, maybe the day after too. And I thought the two most important and creative inventions of the 20th century, one was that little half moon of carpet they put around the commode for you to kneel on. That was invented by one of our people, I'm sure. And the other one was that soft commode seat you could rest your head on in between the heaps. Remember those? They're real soft. They're not as cold as a porcelain, but they're real soft, right, Lee? I see you laughing there. Yeah, those things were really nice. And So I'm in there puking up my guts and quitting forever, by the way. Is one of the things I like to do when I'm puking out my nose. I always quit forever. The pre-AA prayer. Now, we've been collecting pre-AA prayers. There's one main one, but a couple of the minor ones are, God, please help me pass this test I didn't study for. Please don't let her be pregnant is another popular one. I'm told it can be prayed in the first person, ladies. And another popular one is, God, please don't let those flashing red and blue lights be for me. It's another popular pre-AA prayer. But the main one, now let me set the scene again, okay? It's now in the neighborhood of 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the bathroom kneeling on the prayer rug. And I'm down to the point in the proceedings where there's nothing coming out but noise and an occasional tear. Remember that part? And and I would pray the pre-AA prayer. And I like to do this in person because it's more fun when I get the whole crowd to do it. But trust me, you know this prayer. You wouldn't be listening to this talk. So I'm going to do the first line and chime in at home with a second line. Trust yourself, you know the prayer. You ready? God, get me out of this. And did you say I'll never do it again? You should have been thinking it. All right. I got a one question. If you're new here and you don't know if you need to be here or not, I got a one question test. Did you know the prayer? Stick around. The earthlings don't know the prayer. They don't know that one. And I brush my teeth and go to bed somewhere in the neighborhood at 2:30 in the morning. I get up at 6. I'm not even hungover yet. Remember that wonderland between drunk and hungover? Oh, I miss that so much. And there I'm in an airport. Bam, man, we blast off. And I'm dying. I've got a headache. It feels like a butcher knife went in right here. I got the headache in the same place every time. My eyelids are made out of sandpaper. My throat and nasal passages are raw from puking all that acid. I got a tremor in my hands. I've selected 100% on the oxygen lever. It will not cure a hangover. Trust me, I tried it hundreds of times. And I'm also tight on the leader flying the mission. And what I've just described for you, in case you missed it, was willpower. Many of us have tremendous willpower. It is no defense against our disease. And the only thing that keeps me going is the absolute certain knowledge that I'll never feel this way in a plane again. Because you see, last night I quit forever. And I meant it with all my heart. Didn't you? Didn't you mean it with all your heart every time you quit forever? I did. And by 5:30 that afternoon, I'm not quite well, but pretty close. I'm only 23 years old. My body's resilient. I've been eating saltines and drinking whole milk all day. And Alka-Seltzer has the new product out with lemon in it. I've been field testing it for them. And I'll tell you one thing I know for sure. I'm not getting drunk tonight. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be number four. There's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4. There's going to be 4 of us tomorrow, not 2. We're going to be going over the top at 700 miles an hour, pulling 7.5 Gs. Nobody with a brain to get drunk before going to fly number 4. Can you tell the rest of this story? I need to go on. I thought so. Yeah. Over and over again. And I'd sit in that cockpit with that horrible hangover, getting ready to light afterburners. And I couldn't look into the past all the way to yesterday. I'd say, wait a minute. Weren't you dying of a hangover yesterday? And 5 days last week and 20 days last month. And I was powerless over alcohol. And I was ignorant of the fact that I was powerless over alcohol. I had the privilege of flying for the United States Air Force for 5 years. I've got 2,500 hours of flying time. At least one time I was so drunk I couldn't have driven my car from the quarters to the flight line. Wouldn't have made it. And I'm not proud of that. I was flying a very highly classified mission at that time. Not proud of that. But you see, that's what alcoholism does to nice people like us. It has us tear the hearts out of the people that love us the most and has us disrespect the things we care the most about. Most people don't get to live their dream. I got to throw mine away. I resigned my commission after 5 years. I'm honorably discharged and I got a job as a sales rep. In the summer of 1984, my boss came to me one day and he said, you're going to treatment right now or you're fired. The man was a great communicator. He had the ability to like explain stuff. And June 28, 1984, which was my 41st birthday, it's also my sobriety date. I signed into a little charm school outside of Atlanta, Georgia to overcorrect for a problem I didn't have. That's how I came to you. And it wasn't the staff at that facility that got me. It was you. It was sitting in the day room listening to you tell the truth about your drinking. Let me see the truth about my drinking. I think that's why in the chapter, Working with Others, it's so powerful. And one of the other speakers already talked about it, is that my message isn't about the newcomer's drinking. It's about mine. Because His disease has no defense against the truth about mine. It has no defense against that. And that's how you got me. I had one of the big white light experiences like Bill describes. I've never heard one bigger described. Excuse me. And received the forgiveness from God for the worst thing I'd ever done. It was an astonishing event. I simply don't have time to tell it right now. And I've always been a quick study, though. I zipped through a 28-day treatment program in 6 weeks flat. I've always picked things up quickly. And I came back to my hometown where the only person I knew in the city that was in recovery was one of my customers, and I didn't want him to know. If you don't recognize that, that's newcomer thinking, terminal case. I'm going to die from what's going on in here really soon if I don't get some help with it. So I set out to follow their aftercare plan. They said go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I went to 87. Two of them I just can't remember, but I was about to leave for the meeting one night, and my son fell and hurt himself rather badly. And I put him in the car and drove him to the hospital. We all know that was the right thing. And I thought, if you missed, you just missed. I can't figure out all by myself that you go to two meetings in a day. I have this minor case of terminal newcomer thinking. And they said, stay away from your old playmates and playgrounds. My favorite saloon in Nashville is on 8th Avenue South. And I had a 2-year chip in my pocket the next time my car was on 8th Avenue. I refused to turn onto the street for over 2 years. I'm not kidding. And I completed some very well-meaning people taking the steps off the wall and had some psychology trying to help people. I'm sad about that. I'm going to tell you the two best kept secrets in all of AA. I hope I don't get in trouble for this. Here's the first one. The directions for doing a four-step have been very cleverly concealed in the pages of this book. It's one of our best kept secrets. And it is a series of lists, observations, and prayers. It is my experience that the writing on the four-step doesn't have much. The observations and prayers are life-changing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I hope you'll find out. But anyway, I didn't know that. I completed this psychobabble alleged four-step. And I called down to the treatment center. Now, Bernie had not been my counselor, but he was a counselor down there. I had the big white light experience, and I realized I'm going to have to do this fifth step, this confession thing with somebody. Who to do it with? Bernie is the obvious choice. You could look at Bernie and tell he was stoned out of his mind. You know what it looks like, right? His face is real relaxed. He got this dumb grin. When he walks, he kind of shuffles along. You know what it looks like when somebody's ripped? So I asked him before I left, I said, can I do my fifth step? And he said, sure, call me. I thought, I'm going to do my fifth step with this junkie. 6 weeks later, he won't even know if we did it. He's the perfect choice. So I called. He said, yeah. And I did my first fifth step with Bernie, and I began to get relief. Now, if I'd been doing the actual steps, that'd be the ones out of this book, with an actual sponsor that's already done them out of this book, I would have gotten relief way before then. As an aside, Bernie was not actually stoned. Bernie was sober over 20 years. That was serenity. I didn't know what it looked like, because I still dying from this minor case of terminal newcomer thinking. And at that point, at about 4 months, I'd done everything on my aftercare list except get a sponsor. And I was so insane, I was looking for a sponsor I could relate to. Thank God I didn't find a sponsor I could relate to. We'd both be dead by now. Holy mackerel, I can't figure out, you go to two meetings in a day. Who can I relate to? Whoa, I can relate to some other squirrel that has no hope. Thank God I didn't find a sponsor I could relate to. We'd both be dead by now. What I needed was a sponsor whose suggestions I would follow. Why would I do that? I want to look like he looks. I want to sound like he sounds. I want my life to work like it looks like his life is working. And there was this guy named Jerry in my meetings. He was sober 5 years. When he talked, the voices in my head would shut up. Sometimes I sit in the meeting, can't hear the meeting for the voices. And I thought, wow, he's perfect. So I went up to him and I said, will you sponsor me? And he said, well, we'll see. Here's your first assignment. I thought, assignment? I thought a sponsor's like a new best friend, going to introduce me around, show me some of the better meetings, maybe loan me some money, fix my wife. Oh, I was wrong about a lot of things when I got here. And I don't have time to talk about what that first assignment was. And it took me a week and I did it. I said, sponsor me. And he said, I'll sponsor you my way. I said, what does that mean exactly? He said, you are too sick to stay sober on the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You will need the program also. And I had no idea what he's talking about. And he gave me the number one biggest kept secret in all of Alcoholics Anonymous. The way we keep it secret is we read it at almost every meeting. It's the definition of the program. Right before step one, it says, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. No steps, no program. The meetings are not the program. I heard this. I wish I could give credit. I don't remember who said it. The definition of insanity is thinking you're in a 12-step program and not actually taking all 12 steps. I'd like to propose that if you haven't taken all 12, you are not in a 12-step program, and you're listening to this, you might want to give consideration to getting into one. And but anyway, he said, you will work the 12 steps the way I lay them out at the pace I set, or I will drop you like a bad habit because I don't work with losers. And he scared me so bad, the truth jumped out of me. I don't know about you, but I save the truth for emergencies. I don't spread it around real thick. And I said, Jerry, I don't want to do the 12 steps. He said, that's okay. I said, good. He said, long as you do them. And I said, I don't think we're communicating. He said, you've been hearing the word willingness? I said, yes. He said, here's the definition. Willingness, surrender, and bottom all have the same definition. It's when someone who's qualified, like my sponsor, asks me to do something I don't like, that I don't think will help, that I don't want to do, and I do it anyway. And anything is short of that, I have not surrendered, I don't have willingness, and I ain't at bottom, because they all have the same definition. So I didn't like how this was going, so I hit him with my Sunday punch. I said, why? Yeah, some of you are grinning at that. There's a lesson coming here, right, John? And he said, I don't answer why questions for the men I sponsor. And the reason is, why is a management question? Step one, section B says, you're not in management. Consequently, all questions begin with the word why have the same answer. The answer is, you don't need to know. Hated that when he said it. Today, I embrace it as one of my cornerstones. See, I thought it was not knowing that made me crazy. Incorrect. It was needing to know that made me crazy. When I was able to lay down the need to know, I got peaceful and I began to know. He said, I'm feeling really generous this morning, Sparky. I'm going to give you one why question. Don't ever ask another one. Lifetime. The reason you have to do the 12 steps is because the alcohol and drugs are not your problem. What? They're not your problem. They're your answer. Thank you. Taller, smarter, better looking, a great dancer. So when we say to you, put that stuff down, we haven't said put down your problem. We've said lay down the only answer you have ever known. This is the lubricant of life. This is why your skin fits. Put that down. And when you do, that leaves you without an answer. And you're the kind of guy who needs an answer. You'd have never been an alcoholic. So if you're going to lay down the old answer, you're going to have to pick up a new answer that's at least as good as the old answer. And I said, why, every time the man took a breath. And he said, our program, the 12 steps, kind of like going to the dentist. We've got to drill before we can fill. Like the dentist, we got Novocaine. Here we call it sponsorship, fellowship, home group, love. Far, far easier than the way you've been living. And this is where he got me. He said, think of yourself as a garbage can. I said, yeah, okay. He said, we're going to do these steps is dump you out. We're going to stand back or clean the can, stand it back up, go through your life. Most of it's garbage. Go toss it. Portions are good. Like you love your kids. I said, yeah, great. We'll keep that. We finish these steps. You're going to be a big, empty, clean can with just a little good stuff in the bottom. The reason, one of these days, something heavy is going to slam into your heart. He said, your father's going to die. And on that day, you got a little good stuff in the bottom. But on that day, if you don't have that big, empty, clean space to store that pain in, while we love you back to spiritual health, you will escape. And the only escapes you know are killing you and tearing the hearts out of the people that love you. And I ran out of why. And I allowed the man to coach me through the 12 steps. And I got what I think is the most powerful promise in our book. It's on page 60. It's the first line. It says 12. Having had a spiritual awakening, at the result of these steps. You hear people read A results, not what it says. A is one of several or one of many.
2 minutes.
Thank you. The is singular. It promised me one thing. Spiritual awakening. It is my experience that spiritually awakened alcoholics do not drink beverage alcohol and they don't get thirsty. So if you're new, our mission here isn't to keep you from ever drinking again. That's a side effect. The mission is to get you changed so you never get thirsty again. And all you may not be able to imagine that, those of us who actually do these 12 steps and stay active, live it. I think I'm going to quit right there. I've got so much more. My normal podium talk's an hour and 15 minutes. You have gotten the shorthand version. And I speak awful fast for a guy from the South, but I think I got a lot to say. I want you to know that I love you with all my heart, and I'm most grateful for the opportunity. And we invited God. I like to think he came. And if you borrowed my God and you got touched, do it again. If you invited your God to the meeting and you got touched, do that again. Take that to your home group. See what happens. God bless and keep you. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott. Freaking level.